The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast, where one of the hosts thinks a hump move should be directed at a leg. That's Lenny, who has been doing that a lot lately. I don't know why. Maybe like a dirty old man thing. I'm Mina Kimes, and I am joined for the second time by a guest who, this is your second time on the podcast. The people were clamoring to have you back after the NFC South preview pod because they just can't get enough NFC South right now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mina. I appreciate the people clamoring for a division that, oh man, I mean, look, it's tightly contested at the end of the season. God. Isn't that what everybody wants from the divisions in the NFL?
I keep like gesturing towards the NFC South, kind of like the way somebody would point at like a bunch of boxes in your house that you don't want to deal with. I'm like, it'll sort itself out at some point. We are talking about one of the NFC South teams. We're going to talk about the Bucks, who is a team you know very well, mm-hmm. a team that I haven't really talked about in a while. So I am caught up on the Bucks. Watched a little bit of Bucks to prepare for this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It's a big game, meaningful playoff round. The crazy thing about the NFL right now is that just like usually by this time last year, I feel kind of bad because I'm talking about the same teams. I'm not talking about a bunch of teams because so many teams are effectively rolled out. But this year, the playoff race is going to go down to the wire. It is, especially the AFC is crazy. The AFC, I'm going to do a YouTube video on this, MinaKimes.com, or no, it's not MinaKimes, it's YouTube.com/@MinaKimes. Check it out. Talking about all of the AFC teams that are over 500 because there are 11 of them right now, which is crazy. In trying to sort out sort of why, what's good about those teams and why they could potentially make a run. One of those teams is the Denver Broncos. So let's start there. Let's start with Broncos Lions. We're going to, as always, preview some games. There's some big ones, some bigger than others. You're going to help me pick some. I did very bad last week because of all the underdogs, but we're going to go through all the rest of the games at the end. But I did, I sent you a list of games, and I am excited to talk about the Broncos and the Lions because this is a very hard game to pick, which is odd because I think a month ago, or certainly 2 months ago, John, I think everybody would have just automatically said Detroit.
Yeah, the fortunes of both these teams have swung in opposite directions, sort of, and a lot of it's turnover related, right? I mean, Jared Goff, through the first stretch of this season, like there was few better at protecting the football, which isn't necessarily something we've known Goff for, but over the first 9 games of the season, he had just 6 turnover-worthy plays per PFF, but over the past 4 games, he has 8. And so that is a big reason why the Lions are moving in the opposite direction. The Broncos, meanwhile, lots of turnovers early in the season. They're in the negative. Now they are leading the NFL in turnovers defensively in terms of takeaways. So that is really, it's a swing stat, right? So which means the game could go either way, depending on how this goes. The one thing I'm concerned about if I'm Detroit, they don't protect Jared Goff like they did early in the season. Okay. Everybody wants to blame Goff. But like, if you look at the reality right now in the situation, he's under pressure on 35% of his dropbacks, despite having the 6th fastest time to throw of any quarterback in the league right now. It's somewhat on him because when anything goes wrong, he goes wrong. But at the same time, if that offensive line can be better and can get back to full health, everybody practiced, I think, yesterday, they could be a better team still moving forward.
I let's start there. And you make a fantastic point about the protection, because I think sometimes with teams, we stick to a narrative about the team when it's no longer true deep into a season. And I think with the Lions, there's an assumption for those who aren't watching Lions games or haven't been watching, you know, when they're not been in a prime time or whatever, there's this, oh, they have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. So, you know, they can run the ball with dominance. Jared Goff's fine back there. But what you just said is something that's really affected this offense. It's what really jumped out to me in the loss to Chicago, which is the struggles that they had in pass protection. And there's been injuries there. I believe Graham Glasgow was playing center for Frank Ragnow. I think that does make a massive difference for them on the interior. But the one thing we know about Jared Goff, and I I think we can say it confidence because he's played so much football now, is he is a quarterback who is dramatically affected by pressure. This has always been the case, even when he's played well in Los Angeles or last year in Detroit. If you can protect him, he's fantastic. He has a great arm. He's accurate. He's usually a good decision maker. But the second he's under pressure, he is one of the quarterbacks who is more sensitive to that than others. And you, this year, his QBR when pressured is one. John, it's one. It's 1.3, actually.
And that's despite the fact he also has the fastest time to throw on snap threes under pressure. So it's not even like he's holding the ball and inviting pressure. Like, that's the funny thing about Jared Goff. In some ways, he's kind of like the perfect quarterback until there's pressure, because he's never too deep in the pocket. He always knows when to climb and move in the pocket. He gets the ball out quickly. Like, all the things you kind of want as an offensive lineman, he does in the pocket. The problem is, as soon as anything goes wrong or a guy loses 1v1, it's over. Not only is it over, it could be a disaster for the Lions.
So what concerns me about this matchup is, while I don't think this, you know, Denver defense is elite, they are, I've talked about this on my pod. I talked about it on YouTube. The turnovers certainly help. They have a decent pass rush, and it's a pass rush that has really improved over the course of the season. You know, when they moved on from Frank Clark and Randy Gregory, Baron Browning came back. Since week 7, which is when they started winning games, they have the second highest pressure rate of any four-man rush in the NFL. And when they blitz, and Vance Joseph loves to blitz, they have the third highest sack rate. You saw that against Los Angeles, where they were getting a ton of pressure first on Justin Herbert, then on Easton Stick, both with the standard rush. And also when they send Alex Singleton, or the best player in the NFL, Jaquan McMillan. So the turnover thing, I actually feel like my video is very pro Broncos generally, but some Broncos fans were like, well, you can't, you know, turnover, they're good at getting turnovers, and teams aren't good at getting, like, your turnovers are a thing that tend to regress. That said, I do think Jaquan McMillan might be the biggest turnover machine in the league, and it's not luck. Like, that dude, he plays like a bat out of hell. There was one play, he had like a strip sack that was overturned. He was like defending passes. He had the sack of, it was Herbert. He blitzed a few times in this game. The way he turned the corner and dipped below Rashawn Slater, John, like, he is a legit stud out there.
Yeah, he's like an edge cornerback or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yes. Like
a combo position player. The first time I saw him was in the first match of the season, I believe, against the Chiefs. It's the first time I noticed him on the NFL field, and he had just gotten in because of injuries. And he was like everywhere, and I was like, "Who is this guy?" Like, so I'm like looking him up, and no doubt, players like that, and just in general, Sean Payton's desire to, and Vance just to turn the page and kind of go to some of these younger, more athletic players has been a big move in the right direction for them. Great. Nick Benito, Jonathan Cooper, I think both questionable. I believe they practiced and limited, I think, yesterday. That was the kind of the status. So something to watch. Zach Allen's been good quietly. Nobody's talked about that free agent signing. And maybe they end up, they overpaid him. But right now, he's made a big difference on that defensive line. Haven't heard much about Draymond Jones this season. And so I think that in general, they just made a lot of good decisions, moved in the right direction with their front. Now the question will be that Lions offensive line also getting healthy. You mentioned Glasgow being in there at center. He moved over from right guard. They've played like four different guys at right guard this season. Jonah Jackson's been banged up. The tackles have been pretty good all season, did not play well last week. And I think Dan Campbell said that. He said, some of our best players didn't play well last week. And I think he was talking about Penei Sewell. And I think he was talking about Taylor Decker. And I think he was talking about Aiden Hutchinson and Jared Goff, obviously. And those guys have to play better for that team to be better.
We'll get to Hutchinson and the defense. I do want to ask you, like, I guess, you know, because the defense has been a problem for a while. I think every Detroit fan's pretty down on that unit, and we can talk about how they match up with Denver. But just, you know, to stay on the Lions offense, like, do you have concerns? Like, you know, because until last week, Goff's been a little bit up and down, but they've still been a very good unit. Like, I still think the play calling is good. I know, I think there's some frustration with the fact that the offense can feel kind of constricted. Like, it's, you know, it's a very run heavy unit, but they're very, very good at it. And they're very good at throwing over the middle of the field. They don't really get much production outside the numbers, but again, that's really the personnel that they have. They haven't really gotten Jameson Williams involved. I don't know how much of that is design versus Williams himself maybe not being reliable. Do you feel like it's still like a top 10 NFL offense despite what we saw last week?
I do, but I think that it, when you talk about getting into matchups in the playoffs against defenses that are going to be, you know, coming for you basically, and are just frankly the best defense in the league. You talk about defense like Dallas or San Francisco's, Philadelphia, certainly. I know they're struggling a bit right now, but those defense, like, I think the thing with Detroit is this, you said restricted. And I think that's a very good word for it because they don't threaten you at all levels of the field consistently. And some of that is the scheme. Some of that is how aggressive Goff generally is and just how quickly he likes to get rid of the football in general as a quarterback. I think what the people are missing is that I don't think he's really changed that much. Like even the beginning of the season, maybe he was a tad more aggressive early in the season, but generally speaking, he's pretty much the same quarterback now that he was then. The difference is Jared Goff has kind of always been this way. Like if everything is good around him, everybody's healthy. The offensive line was dominating early in the season. The run game's still good, you know, but all these receivers hitting everything. Okay. Like he is as good as anybody in the league in some ways. Like, but as soon as you need something out of structure, as soon as a specific play breaks down, he has 11 of his 14 turnover worthy plays this season have come when he's under pressure. Like he's almost a perfect quarterback when he's not pressured. The problem is you're always going to be under pressure and part of your dropbacks in the NFL. And the fact that he can't elevate is a problem. The fact that they can't hit as many explosives in the pass game is a problem. That's why Jameson Williams, for all his foibles, and I'm not absolving him of blame either, but Detroit's coaching staff, one of their biggest challenges is going to be, how do we get this guy involved in the offense to a degree where he can be an actual threat down to down, because they need what he brings to the table, what he brings to the offense. And it just hasn't happened consistently this season.
Yeah. Jared Goff, 27th in QBR, throwing outside the numbers this year, just looking at, you know, so it you know, Laporta is so great. Such a good fit for what they do. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he had a bit of a down week last week, but obviously he's amazing, but you can't live solely in the middle of the field the way that I think sometimes they do. If they can just get Williams involved, and I think it would just force defenses to play them differently, like to respect the entire field as well. So, you know, I think there's a bounce back opportunity here for sure, but ultimately it's probably going to come down to what we talked about at the top, which is, can they protect Jared Goff against a improved pass rush? On the other side of the ball, I talked about this. I've talked about it on the pod, but also this was a lot of the video I did on the Broncos. I talked about how the philosophy this year is let Russ make snacks, because he has the lowest average depth of target of his career. It's a lot of screens, throws to the flats, and then they'll sprinkle in the occasional deep shot to Cortland Sutton, who, by the way, so enjoying the Cortland Sutton renaissance. He is an awesome player. So I put out the video, and the next week when they lost, so it wasn't this late last week, it was the previous week, Russ averaged like 13 air yards per attempt. I felt like he was like trying to disprove. I don't actually believe this, guys. I'm not an egomaniac, but I was like, no, Russ, like I did the formula was there. It was working. Then this past week against LA, they went back to the snacks, 5.9. air yards per attempt, and the amazing the amazing ball to Cortland Sutton, and then he had one to Judy. That Judy, like, you know, it was his fault, but that is what they're doing. That is what they want to do. That is the identity of this Denver offense. Do you think they'll be able to do it successfully against a Lions defense that has been quite bad now for a couple of months?
Yeah. The big struggle for the Lions is that their cornerback play just isn't what they hoped it would be this season. And they hoped they'd have Emmanuel Mosley, and their safety play, you could say the same thing for. They hoped they'd have Emmanuel Mosley and he would be one of their starters opposite Cam Sutton, and that Jerry Jacobs would be their backup. And then they hoped, obviously, that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would be the starter next to Kirby Joseph, and Joseph would play free safety, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would be there, do everything safety. And then they have Brian Branch and all this positional versatility. Everybody can play the nickel and all this stuff. Because of injuries, it just hasn't happened that way. Gardner Johnson's missed most of the season, obviously. Mosley came back, then got hurt immediately, and he'll be out the rest of the year. So because of that, it's been a situation where Jerry Jacobs, who started the season okay and made some splash plays, has just been getting exposed kind of left and right now. And he is a tough, competitive player. On a snap-to-snap basis, he isn't a bad football player. But what happens is that there is almost every – time, every game, there is a couple just what are you doing plays where he gets beat for a splash play. He's allowed 7 touchdowns this season, and 4 of those have come over the past 5 weeks. And late in this game, Kendall Vildor actually replaced him at outside corner. So I don't even know what the group is going to look like necessarily. I feel Cam Sutton has been up and down as well, but I think what he brings to the table is a little more reliable and fixable. And I think they just have kind of lost some faith in Jacobs. They benched Tracy Walker this past week, and they started Ifeatu Emelifonwu instead. So I think they're searching for answers right now as a defense. Tough to, I mean, you said it, Russ is definitely making snacks this year, but at the same time, he's completed, I think he still is one of the highest adjusted completion percentage in deep balls this season. He's still completed like 22 of those things this year, like 20 plus air yards or more. Like, he can rip the thing still. And that's the one thing about Russ that has to scare the Lions the way their defense is playing currently.
It's almost like Russ is like, as a quarterback, a analytically optimized NBA team. Right, where it's literally just layups and the occasional three. I guess you're shooting more threes, but Peyton's taken out. There's just not much of an intermediate passing attack with this offense, and it's fine because it's working. And to your point about the Lions' defense, they're very prone to giving up the explosive play downfield. And on short passes, I looked this up out of curiosity, since week 8, they have the 2nd worst success rate in the NFL. Linebacking group is not great in coverage. Anzalone came, he was better in the beginning of the year, but he came back and struggled. I think there is, like, on both sides of the football, you can kind of make a case for how the strengths of this Broncos team match up well with the weaknesses of Detroit. And I say that, John, thinking Detroit is like fundamentally a better team. But when you start looking at matchups and tendencies, you get a little bit nervous about them in this game. And this feels like a must win for them.
You do. And if you didn't trust Denver's coaching as much, even if they were hot and you just didn't trust the coaching and decisions, maybe you would be inclined to go to Detroit, because I do think Detroit is a very well-coached team for the most part. Now people are going to bring up Aaron Glenn and the foibles there, and I understand. I also think he's made the most of personnel throughout the year that has been available to him, especially in that secondary, a group that they just thought would look a lot different than it has looked this season. And so I think there's some of that. I would like to see them get away from playing 3 linebackers on the field as much as they do. Can they add some speed and coverage ability underneath? They have all these versatile DBs. Can they play a little more of a dime look at times and just say, hey, if you're going to beat us against the run, you're going to beat us against the run. But sometimes this obsession with being so heavy up front and not losing in the trenches can just invite teams to just surgically take you apart underneath in the pass game. I think there's some moves to be made if you're Detroit that I think, I mean, they haven't really fallen. Like, they haven't played as well, but they still won some of these games. And in the NFL, you know, as well as I do, it's like a result oriented business. If you lose 3 in a row, then we make the changes. Now that they've lost 2 out of 3, I think it is, maybe they're more inclined to make some of those changes. The other interesting aspect of this is getting Bruce Irvin in here. Can the pass rush group kind of save some of what's happened in the secondary? Losing Liam McNeil, just a huge loss. Again, like, all these guys go down, and it hurts everything that they're trying to do. James Houston early in the season. And so it's disrupted anything that they've gotten once they've gotten in a flow. And Hutchinson, although he's a good player, we were a little out over our skis maybe in the media space in general and just saying, like, he's going to be a tier 1 pass rusher this season. That's not been the case. He's been a good player for sure. I'm not saying the pick is a bust or anything like that, but I don't know that he's the kind of guy that's going to carry a rush group by himself. So they need other players to step up and be a part of the solution up front.
I'll tell you what Aiden Hutchinson can't do is stunt inside against Russell Wilson like he did to Justin Fields. I feel bad because it's kind of gone viral, that clip. But, like, you know, Russell Wilson will move, and he's moving well right now, by the way. So that's something you need to watch out for as well with Denver, especially in the red zone. Man, I don't know who I'm going to pick in this one. I think I'm going to pick Detroit because I do believe that they're a better team. I do think they're well coached. I think the offense can get back on track for sure. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like every other Denver game, this like goes down to the 4th quarter, and I don't know. But yeah, I'll probably pick Detroit. How about you?
Yeah, this is a good one. I mean, obviously, as we talked about, kind of a difficult selection to make. And the one thing about Detroit we didn't talk about is just the fact that they can really run the football and like really run the football. Like they can create explosives in the run game. And if they get all their offensive line back, I also feel pretty good about them. Denver is playing well right now, and they have beaten some good teams. They're just playing clean and efficient football. And Detroit has kind of been the opposite lately. So it does feel like it's kind of trending in a direction that if the norms continue, but we've said they're fickle, like a lot of the things we're talking about can be pretty fickle week to week, then I think Denver will be able to be victorious. But I'm going to guess that the Lions right the ship here. I just trust the coaching. I think that this team has done a good job of when a weakness gets exposed, how do we correct it? How do we work around it? They weren't afraid to pull the trigger and get some guys out of the lineup this past week. They're searching a little bit. I think they can figure it out. For all the talk about Denver, I'm not trying to get the fan base riled up in me, but they are still kind of a middling team. If you look at any analytic, like offensively, they're like, yeah, they've been pretty average all season. That's kind of what they are. The explosives help keep things alive, but like you said, it's not been like a consistent every drive. They're just taking people apart approach. So I think if the Lions defense can hang in there, I'm actually not that worried about their offense overall. I just think it's a question of if their defense can hang in there.
I think they're just running out of dudes, to your point. I'm glad you took the time to like talk about all of the injuries on that side of the ball. Like I know that I think Aaron Glenn is probably one of the more maligned coordinators right now. I think in his own division, Joe Barry's probably got him beat, but
rightfully so.
He is really up against it from a personnel perspective. But I think the offense will be fine. I agree with you. I think that they'll be better. That offensive line is too talented. And, you know, when they're healthy, I think even against a surprisingly good Denver pass rush, I think we'll see a better game out of them. All right. So from snacks to the main course, let's do Cowboys Bills now.
Big game. You texted me about this one, so I know you were really excited that this game was about to happen.
I got a question from First Take. Who needs it more? I'm like, probably the team that's on the verge of elimination. I'm going to go with Bills needing it more. Tough matchup for both defenses. Shootout potential, in my opinion. Let's start with the Bills offense versus the Cowboys defense is the more even match. I mean, the Bills defense has actually played way better over the last few weeks than I think I thought after, you know, losing Milano and Tre'Davious White. But the, you know, Cowboys defense is still one of the better units in the NFL. So we've seen sort of a different, the Bills offense has evolved under Joe Brady. More likely to run the ball. They're more likely to use James Cook in the passing game. Dawson Knox is back. You saw them bring back a little bit of that 12 personnel that they had with him and Kincaid. Mm-hmm. Allen is rushing more, which that to me is less about, I don't know, but that's just what Josh Allen does in December. He carries the football. It is their break in case of emergency. Do you think that there's weaknesses on this Bills or Cowboys defense that they're suited to exploit?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know if personnel-wise, I would have pointed to their safeties many times over the past years, but it just doesn't seem like it's ever true. Like, I'm always like, man, these safeties, you got to attack them. And then you play the game, and it's just like, wow, they're good. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, they always seem to find their way within the context of the game. And same thing at corner. They just plug Deron Bland in, and he's doing the same thing Diggs did. And so it is kind of unbelievable what Dan Quinn's been able to do. I hesitate to call any player a weakness or a liability on their unit just because of how Dan Quinn has gotten those guys to be able to play at a pretty high level. The Bills' just unpredictability right now is playing in their favor. Like, you could see it in the Chiefs game. They were like, hold on a second, you're throwing to running backs and not just in the flat and in checkdowns.
Yeah.
Designed routes, like your running back's going vertical from the backfield, like and they were just like, you could see it was just confusion. And so that kind of the coordinator change, you know, bump kind of is played in the Bills' favor. Is it long-term sustainable? We need a larger sample size to know, but to me, that's probably the biggest. If you're a Cowboys defense, it's just like, you can't prepare for them the same way you prepared for a Philadelphia that you play every year or a Kyle Shanahan that you play every year. You know, like those are different animals. You kind of know somewhat, although Shanahan's an enigma himself, like what to expect, you know, in those matchups. Buffalo, I think there's just a lack of, you're not really sure what's going on here yet in terms of how they're going to do. I mean, they called quarterback power on the goal line against a zero blitz look, and they just didn't come out of the play, Mina. They just were like, we're running it, and he gets hit and then gets in the end zone because the whole team pushed him across. So you just have no idea what the Bills are doing right now on offense. I think it's the unpredictability that makes them dangerous.
It's amazing they haven't called that more. I was thinking that when I watched Josh Allen just, you know, Terminator him his way in short yardage. I think, though, that's what makes them so the coordinator change, it's a really good point. The one thing that really impressed me in the win against the Chiefs was that if you had told me that the Chiefs would effectively blank Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis didn't have a single catch, I probably would have said the Bills have lost this football game. And they didn't, because of all the other things we've been talking about that they did with Cooks and the QB run and all of that and the tight ends. And I kind of think the same thing might happen against Dallas, especially now. Like, well, let me revise that. I'm not sure Stephon Gilmore, who was fantastic last week against Philadelphia, even though he gave up a fair amount of yards to A.J. Brown, which it's A.J. Brown, he's still so savvy and physical. You know, he made some game-changing plays. Obviously, the punch-out tackled Devontae Smith and fourth down. So I guess my feeling is, like, if they have Gilmore travel on Diggs again, which is what it seems like they've been doing with him now more, that Trevon Diggs, his brother, is out, Allen will go to his left hand. It's like, okay, you're going to put my right hand behind my back. All right, we will attack you with our tight ends. We will attack you with our backs. We will attack you with me, Josh Allen, being a Terminator and using his legs. The biggest matchup advantage that Dallas has on that side of the ball is their pass rush against this Bills offensive line. But that advantage is mitigated a lot by the fact that Josh Allen is the best quarterback in the NFL when pressured right now. Lamar Jackson and him probably neck and neck. But like when you pull up like QB splits, pressured and unpressured, every quarterback is significantly worse except for Josh Allen. It's insane. Like it's insane. What he's able to do against pressure is insane. And I think that presents some problems for Dallas, as good as they are up front.
No doubt. I mean, I think containing the pocket is a big reason why, because Josh Allen is so quick to break contain and to get out of structure and feel so comfortable and make so many plays. And I mean, you saw the fadeaway jumper that he threw falling out of bounds on the sideline.
What do you do?
It's just crazy. Like, how do you defend something like that? The other thing they have to just be really conscious of is just, I mean, Dallas, they can't blitz him. Like, he has been blitzed this season on like 34% of his dropbacks, and he's just absolutely cooking blitzes this season. It's the Matt Stafford situation, right? But this guy has legs too, so he can beat you in multiple ways. So that's the thing Dallas has to make sure that they're being conscious of, is just like knowing what his strengths are, being able to contain him is almost a 32% blitz rate basically this season per Pro Football Reference. And so this is a team that will send pressure. They're just able to rely on four. And the other thing is, they need to be very careful with the games that they run, because while they're effective and the Dallas is maybe the best team in the league because of Micah Parsons at running those, if they run a bunch up front, Allen is going to break that contain. He'll anticipate them and get outside before they can get home. So that I would be just concerned about keeping him in the pocket if I was Dallas, more so than let's try and do everything we can to get in there and rattle him, because it's not going to happen.
That's really a good point about the Dallas pass rush and the risk of being over aggressive in trying to get north south against Allen. You have to change the way you rush the quarterback. I mean, I think that they have, I think, not this year so much, but last year against Jalen Hurts, you saw like that they're able to change it up, and I think come in with like a disciplined plan against a quarterback like that. But it really starts up front, because, you know, if he gets to the second level, I think that's where suddenly the advantage evaporates. I like this Buffalo team against these Cowboys linebackers a lot, although they'll probably counter them with a fair amount of, you know, they'll have their DBs on the field a lot because they're so good at tackling. But yeah, it's a challenge, man. Josh, like, it's crazy that they're 7-6. Because they're just so not a 7-6 team. This is so not a 7-6 offense. I think that I saw they have the third best point differential in the AFC. They have a plus 104 point differential, wow, which is crazy for a team with that record. For comparison, yeah, your Pittsburgh Steelers are like negative 40 and they're 7.
I thought you were going to leave it alone, Mina.
7-6, same record. It's yeah, wins and losses.
Two very teams misleading. Play different sports, I would say.
On the other side of the ball, I do think the Bills' defense has played pretty well in recent weeks. However, since week 6, so the week after Milano went down, on passes to the middle of the field, they are 30th in success rate, allowing a passer rating of 123, which is the second worst in the NFL. Well, there's a quarterback in Dallas who really likes throwing to the middle of the field, John. Don't love that matchup for this Bills defense. Especially given what we've seen from Dallas in terms of Dak attacking that, not just by throwing to CeeDee Lamb, but now Jake Ferguson and Brandon Cooks as well.
Yeah, it's harder and harder to find a way to feel like you have a thing against this Cowboys offense, right? Like early on in the season, it was like, okay, they're not even using Brandon Cooks. There's no explosives. Yeah. Like they're not really stretching the field. The ADOT's low. Like, okay, I know they're okay, but like, can they add another element? But then this recent stretch they've been on, I mean, they're fourth now, up to fourth in the NFL this season in 20-plus yard pass plays. 53% of their drives, Mina, end in a score. 53, that's 8 percentile points better than the team in second place. It's not even close. So when they get the ball, and then they hardly ever turn it over. That was the big thing last year. It was like they had all these – they had the explosives. They were a good offense in some ways, but they turned it over all the time. And some of that was just like we talked about luck, like, right? 7.6% of their drives end in a turnover these days and this season. And that's third best in the NFL. They're third in EPA per play. It's hard to find like a weakness to them in the passing attack right now because everybody's going Jake Ferguson down the seam, Lamb on every route under the sun, Cooks you have going vertically. They can attack you with big plays horizontally or vertically down the field. They have a lot going for them right now. The run game, it's middling, but I just think right now, and the other thing that gets lost in all this, the Dak for MVP conversation, Ollie Connolly and I just talked about this on our podcast. So if some people are in it twice, you get double dose of it. But we just feel strongly about the Dak for Prescott for MVP because not only is he doing this, but he is also in full command at the line of scrimmage before the ball is snapped all the time. So we are talking about a guy who's like a supercomputer before the ball is snapped, is changing full plays and just has complete control mentally and then also obviously the physical stuff. So he is just doing it at such a high level. Even if the Bills were at full health, it's hard to just envision how you slow down this offense without getting a couple breaks.
And that mental stuff matters a lot against this defense because of the amount of disguise that they use on the back end, constantly changing post-snap the picture that they present to quarterbacks in coverage. But Dak Prescott's not a quarterback. You can easily fool with those looks. Yeah, I feel like the best case for Buffalo is a shootout, frankly, which totally possible given the way Josh Allen is playing football. I like the fact that Mike McCarthy has been so aggressive this year with Dak. And I think in a game like this, where, like I said, there is shootout potential, that could be the difference. I'll throw out one other thing I want to mention, because I haven't mentioned this at all with Dallas, but as we start looking ahead to the playoffs and thinking through how complete these teams are, they have the best kicker in the NFL, maybe. Yo, like I never talk about the, I mean, I talk about Justin Tucker sometimes. And of course, my guy Younghoe Koo, but Brandon Aubrey, 30 for 30, or maybe that's gone up since, I can't remember. No, it was the Eagles game is when he banged in like the 59 and 60 yarder, and those kicks were perfect.
Yeah,
That matters when you're talking about games like this that are between two elite offenses. Like,
It's a great point. Yeah. I didn't realize he's 8 for 8 on 50 plus yard kicks. That escaped me. I know they said he was perfect. I didn't realize he'd had that many from 50 plus. I mean, it's wild what he's doing. It's obviously, we know how the nature of kicker, as you mentioned, Koo, he missed 250 plus yarders last week. I was like, where did this miss come from? But still, you're right. Like, no doubt having that as a weapon, especially because that's been a question mark for the Cowboys at other times over. I don't remember the exact years, but I know kicker's been a question mark for them. It feels like everything's falling into place for the first time for Dak in Dallas. Like, there's always been something that was just off. Like, did Kellen Moore and McCarthy hate each other? Who's the other wide receivers? Like, Gallup gets hurt, and the offensive line's in shambles last year. And, you know, there's always feels like it's been something. Dak's playing the best ball of his career. He breaks his ankle. Like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it feels like it's all falling in place for him this year. And he's responding by having the best season of his career.
I'm going to take the Cowboys mostly because I think that the Bills defense is due for a little bit of a letdown game. However, backs against the walls, Josh Allen playing out of his mind. I don't think it's going to be easy, but I'm going to take Dallas. How about you?
I need to disagree with you on some of these, but I just think I'm riding high on Dallas right now. And this is one of those things that over the years, it's like, as soon as Dallas gets up, you know, early this year, they lost to the Cardinals. And I was like, all right, I'm done. But then I watch them this year. And I'm like, they're just putting it together. Like at a really high level. This could go either way, though. I mean, the Bills are awesome. Like, the Bills are way better than the record. In some ways, I like just selfishly from a football standpoint, I'd like to see them win just to get into the, like, ensure they're in the playoffs.
Yes.
Rather than a team that can't play.
Yeah.
So that's why, I'd still think Dallas. I just think they're a better team right now.
I would much rather watch Josh Allen than some of the other quarterbacks who I will not name who are on teams that are in the hunt. Okay, let's take a quick break, come back, and let's talk about your Bucks. Let's rip the Band-Aid. Bucks time.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, you keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
The Bucks are playing the Packers. Must win. The Bucks division leading, right? Tampa
yes.
Bay.
Oh, you're correct.
I don't even know who I'd want to win that division right now. Or who I think should. I don't even know. Like, if
I
you
think
ask
it's
me
Tampa Bay still, right? Like, isn't it? I mean, if you're just talking about playoff, like, Baker Mayfield just has the gamer aspect. He's led a couple late drives this season to get I don't know. I'm making a pitch for him. I covered this team for a couple years, and I feel like, organizationally, do you want to see the Saints rewarded, Mina? Do you want to see them rewarded for abusing the salary cap this way, for going on in Derek Carr? Well, is this what you want?
Let's start here. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Baker Mayfield's probably the best quarterback in the division.
And he probably, if they don't pull off those last couple of plays against Atlanta, probably gets benched. Not benched because of him, but just because they're probably turning the page to Kyle Trask.
They're all constantly on the precipice of being benched or have been benched, or I don't know. The Bucks 18th passing DVOA, 26th in rushing. However, I did watch them against the Falcons. I do feel like Rashad White is a good football player, both as a back and as a pass catcher, especially. And it feels like it's the run game, which was pretty dismal at the beginning of the season. It doesn't look as bad as it did early on.
Oh, definitely not. No, they are, yeah, like you said, 26th in rush EPA, I believe, too. But they are clearly determined to run. So we gotta look at it. And Canales said, Dave Canales, offensive coordinator, said early in the year, he said, we're going to run the football. And from Seattle, we did this, and it took us a while to get it right. Like, but we stuck with it. And
did improved. Did Seattle get it right? Did Seattle get it right, Dave? Yeah. All right.
Sorry. Good question.
I'm not mad. But
in the five games since week 10, the Bucs are 17th in rush EPA. So it is better. They are not the worst team in the league running the football anymore. They definitely were before that. So things are improving. They've had a couple hundred yard games. They have stuck with it. When they run sometimes is really questionable, like 2 minute situations. And it's like, they go run, pass. And I'm like, that is the part Canales is really figuring out still. But conceptually, what he's done is he's taken a run game that at the beginning he said, we're going to go inside zone, we're going to go split zone, we're going to pound the ball between the tackles. Now he said, let's go gap and power. And that is really played to White's strengths. You mentioned seeing him shine more. Now they are using pullers and they're running counter. I mean, at the end of the game last week, there you saw counter a couple times on that game-winning drive and the drive before that against Atlanta. They ran for, in the fourth quarter, I believe, 74 yards. I think they had 71 all game before that, something like that. And so they really have said, okay, now we're going to play. He has changed things to play to the strengths of his players really well, which I think is good. White, if you watch him in zone concepts, it does not happen for him as naturally. If you watch him when he has to just follow this lead blocker and move off of his block, it's way easier for him. And so he's played to his player strengths. He's gone more 11 personnel to run the ball. He's lightened the box. It has helped tremendously. The offensive line is growing and getting better. They're already a very good pass protection unit. So there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic and excited about Tampa Bay. I think a lot of the growing pains this season have been, who's the quarterback going to be? And yeah, Baker's up and down play. The offensive coordinator and just play calling, play sequencing has been an adventure. And then the defense, the injuries are part of it, but also I'm way more concerned about that side of the ball.
We'll get to that side. Let's stick with the offense for a second. I do think the run game, as you described it, especially leaning more on gap concepts, will have success against a Packers defensive line. Front generally does just that can be pushed around and plays the run in a way where I think actually those concepts will be more successful. We've seen defense offenses have success against this Packers front doing that. I have trouble trying to forecast how this Bucs offense will perform ever because of Baker's inconsistency. Like, he sometimes, some of it, the throws he makes are, I would put up with any quarterback in the league that, you know, on a week to week basis to all parts of the field. The problem is just, you don't know when they're going to happen and when he's going to sail it or just totally miss a dude. And I think, there are certainly matchup advantages between these Bucs wide receivers and these Packers DBs, no doubt. But can I trust the quarterback to deliver the ball effectively? Like, I feel like they're probably going to go heavy play action in this one. I think he'll have time. I think guys will get open. But again, it's just hard for me to project what you're going to see from Mayfield on any given Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big issues is the fact that the Bucs can't hit explosive plays down the field at a high rate. They try them. They try to. Canales draws them up. They're there a lot of the time. This season, Baker has tried to hit him. I mean, they're almost 14% of his attempts are 20-plus air yard throws. He just hasn't been able to hit him, like, with accuracy this season. And there's been a couple drops for sure, but he is a 23.7% adjusted completion percentage on throws of 20 yards or more. And that's almost 14% of his attempts this season. That's just not good enough. Like, when you're an offense that is rebuilding in the offensive line, although they're good and you don't run the ball that well, although it's getting better, you have to be able to hit explosives. You're not going to be able to string plays all the way down the field. So when you couple all the issues, it's kind of like if you look at their numbers, it's like Mike Evans having a great year, Godwin's still here, Trey Palmer's flash as a rookie, Kate Otten's been good in the red zone. But like when on a consistent basis, like the drives they hit, it's like it's great, but it doesn't all come together at once that often throughout a game because there's still fractures of everything that isn't working. If they could just hit some of these explosives that are there, then they would be a different offense. Like that would account for a touchdown or two every game because they haven't been able to hit those. I mean, everybody looks at the Lions game and they're like, oh, they were going to lose that game no matter what. If you watch the tape of that game, there's guys open down the field all game long and Baker could not hit them. And the Lions got exposed. Like I think it was a week after that against Baltimore for having the same issues, the ones we just talked about with them. And so there's something here to what Canales is doing. But if he can figure out the play sequencing and play calling and Baker can figure out how to hit some of those plays, there's big plays to be had against a defense in Green Bay. And we're going to talk about both these defenses. But the Packers, it hasn't been actually as bad against the pass as it has been against the run. But right now, they're 30th in explosive plays given up. That'd be 10-plus yard runs and 20-plus yard passes this season. They've allowed 84 of those, 30th in the NFL. So they give up big plays left and right. The Bucs have to take advantage and hit them.
I don't think there's anyone who can hang with Mike Evans downfield. But again, you spelled it out. I don't trust Baker to throw it to Mike Evans. So, it's hard for me to confidently predict the Bucs having offensive success against any unit because of the inconsistency. But again, I do want to stress there are drives where he looks really good. Like it's not like when you watch Mayfield, it isn't like you're watching like, oh, this is one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. He can't do anything. This offense is non-functional. I think, like I said, at the very beginning, when we started talking about this, he might be the best quarterback in the division, which is crazy. But it's just the down-to-down consistency that is just not there. And that is what you need from a starting quarterback in the NFL. It's why they probably have to move on from him after this season. But
and two things scare me too, Mina, with him. The numbers, turnover-worthy plays. Early in the year, he wasn't making those plays. He's starting to make more of them. And last week, you know, he did avoid that against Atlanta, and Ritter didn't, and that ended up being the difference. But over the past five games this season, he's got 9 turnover-worthy plays. He only has 17 in the whole season. So he stayed away from those in the first couple games of the year, the first stretch half of the year, really. Now those are starting to creep back up. And the other thing is his play under pressure. He was escaping at an unbelievable and unsustainable rate throughout the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. It was almost crazy to watch him. It was like, who is this guy? Because that was a part of his game in college, not really the NFL. Those numbers have kind of regressed back now at this point. So that's a concern too.
So on the other side of the ball, I think that this Bucs defense, that there's really a lot of similarities between the offense and the defense in that. And I think we probably, if you went back to our division preview, it is kind of played out like we expected, which is there's still really good players on this team. They're just not, it's almost like, I would say if the offense, the quarterback is the issue, to my eye, the defense, the pass rush is just not good enough. They don't have an elite pass rusher. So while there's still good players, the interior of the defensive line with Bay and when he's healthy and Kancey, amazing. David's still a good player. Antoine Winfield's like quietly having like one of the best seasons in the NFL right now. And nobody's talking about it because of the team he's on. But I don't think this pass rush should scare a team like Green Bay that has a good offensive line.
Yeah, I agree. And it's the biggest reason why it's hard to pick the Bucs in this game because, you know, Jordan Love this season has been the explosives that Baker hasn't hit, he's hit this season. He's been a great deep ball passer. And so there's that element of this matchup because the Bucs, nobody in the league, actually only Washington, I believe, has given up more. They've given up 54. That's a real number. 54 20-plus yard pass plays this season. Tampa Bay has. Some of that's injuries in the secondary. Most of it is just every single coach they go up against knows they're one of the heaviest spot-dropping teams in the league. They know what kind of coverages they're going to get. And so because of that, they're able to attack what Tampa Bay does defensively over and over again. And so that's one of the things that I'm concerned about. And then the other part of it is if Bulls defense, if that's an issue, the only thing that can save it is the pass rush. And it just hasn't this season. And that's why Bulls has always been relying on that. You're always going to move the ball against Bulls. You're always going to be able to get into the red zone. He needs elite red zone defense, which they've had decent red zone defense. That saved them this season some. They need turnovers. They need sacks. They just haven't gotten those. When they've won games, it's almost always because they've gotten turnovers. But when they haven't been able to get those, and early in the year, that was a big plus. Now it's a minus. And so that's been another thing that's working against him a little bit.
And, you know, Love's coming off of a game where he was inaccurate early on against New York and sort of regressed a little bit. Dominique and I talked about this on Tuesday. I was kind of like not that alarmed by it because I was like, look, he's a young quarterback. He had three great games and he just had bad one. Like, you know, this is what it was always going to look like. I don't really think it's worth hitting the panic button over. Generally this year, he has been pretty good against the blitz, and Matt LaFleur is good at giving him answers against the blitz, which we know Tampa wants to do. I think, like, you know, it's entirely possible he is a little bit inconsistent early on again. That's just been sort of his MO for a lot of this season. But I've seen enough good play out of him and these young players to think that they can move the ball on this defense, given some of the weaknesses we've talked about. So, yeah, I'm going Green Bay here. I think unless, like, you know, Baker connects on some of those downfield shots, or I would say unless Rashad White has a big day on the ground, entirely plausible for all the reasons we talked about with this Green Bay defense and some of the improvements we've seen from Tampa. But I do think the Packers can kind of get back on track after what happened against New York.
Two defenses with a lot of talent, like talented individual players, although both have had injuries this season, talented individual players who I'm not sure they're being coached in a way that this era of football, like what works defensively, I just don't know that they're doing those things right now. I think it could be surprisingly, like maybe not surprisingly to people, but I think it'd be a high scoring game. I think, I mean, both these teams have given up explosives left and right this season in the pass and in the run game. The Bucs have still been good against the run. We'll see if Vea plays. That is a big element of this, probably. I think I just trust Jordan Love a little bit more, and I know he had the struggle game against the Giants a little bit, and I do think that the Bucs, you know, they blitz the third highest rate in the league. That could be a factor in this one because, like you said, Love's been pretty good against the blitz, and we'll see what Bowles does. He's certainly blitzed quarterbacks that have been good against the blitz before because he thinks it's going to work anyway, and Matt Stafford beats you in the playoffs. But anyway, I think that could be an element of this one that determines which way the matchup goes. I just trust that the Packers are going to hit more of those explosives than the Bucs will, and I think that might be where the game's won or lost.
Third highest blitz rate, 27th in pressure rate. Not a great combination in Tampa.
Not good.
Okay, Ravens-Jags. So Trevor Lawrence will play. He played, obviously, gutted out through the injury, had a very bad game this last week. The offensive line was also very bad. Now he gets to go up against a Ravens defense that, coming off of a down performance, granted, against what I think is actually probably a top six or seven offense in the NFL, but like in the Rams, that I think people are kind of now waking up to how good Matthew Stafford has been this season and how good the offense as a whole, you know, the run game and everything. But anyways, it was a letdown game for the Baltimore Ravens. Looks like Kyle Hamilton might play in this one. He was practicing this week despite having the sore MCL. I want him to conserve all of his energy for the big Niners-Ravens game, which is like nerd Super Bowl. But anyways, he's probably going to play. Let's start there. I guess Jags' the offense looks so bad, man. Like, I am not terribly optimistic for improved performance against this defense. If it happens, I think it will be because Trevor Lawrence just gets the ball out really quickly and the playmakers are able to create, like Evan Ingram, who was actually pretty productive. The Ravens defense ranks really high in just about everything, but versus quick passes, 2.5 seconds or less, which is Trevor Lawrence's whole deal, they're actually 25th in success rate, 20th in EPA. So it's, I wouldn't say it's like a glaring weakness. I think some of that is by design, but if there was a formula for Jacksonville, I think it would be like that, keeping Trevor upright as a result.
Yeah, this is hard to figure out how Jackson, because the Ravens, they're kind of a smoke and mirrors defense pretty much like all over the place. Like the sim pressures and how much do you figure out pre-snap and who's coming and who's going. And they don't really blitz a lot and they don't get a ton of pressure rate, but they have basically every time they get pressure, that's a sack. And so they're leading the league in sacks right now. And so it's just, I mean, they have found a way to kind of make everything work. And honestly, they kind of generate issues just by what they do before the ball snapped. And so they have to kind of, they make you kind of, adapt to them, which I think has been one of the struggles for teams this season, is worrying about what they do. The interesting thing about Jacksonville is that if they could find a way, and I don't know exactly how you do it because you need to hold up front, certainly, and you'd probably need to change some of the things you do because it's not really been a big downfield explosive passing team this season. I do think that they have some personnel that could give the Ravens corner struggles, and I think they have a quarterback who can make those throws. They've been a little conservative for my liking this season, and it's irritated me at times watching them. I think I see a lot more potential to be a big explosive, do some Cowboys-like things, honestly, like be some of what Dallas does in their passing attack. Like, I think that they would be wise to incorporate some of those things. If they would just get more aggressive, like, I think the Ravens' corners can be beat down the field at times. But it just happened last week. But I just don't know that I hope that they take from some of what we've seen when the Ravens have struggled and use some of that, because I think there's something there as good as this defense is. But I'm just not totally convinced that they're going to do that or that they're going to get there in this week. So, I mean, to me, like, that's where they have to be able to go to offensively if they're going to win, because I don't think you're going to nickel and dime the Ravens down the field.
Yeah, I don't think they can run on them like the Rams did, especially on that first drive where the Rams had like 9 successful runs. That was really something. I think that was almost like, it looked like the Ravens were like unprepared for them to do that in some ways. Mm-hmm. But when you think about like some of the deep passing concepts that LA had success with Nacua and Kupp against this, there were some outright coverage busts, which was hard, you know, surprising to see. Some of it was, like you said, the Ravens corners struggling against them. You saw them go after Humphrey over and over at the end of the game. And so when you look to the Jags, like you said, you're like, okay, well, you have a quarterback who can make all the throws. You have wide receivers who are capable of beating them. Calvin Ridley, I think Christian Kirk would be really helpful in this game. But what they don't have, I think, is time. I just don't think Trevor Lawrence will have the time to execute on some of that. So I think that's just Jags offensive line is so banged up, and you've got guys going in and out of the lineup. I think I saw Ezra Cleveland is hurt. He got hurt last week, so they had to put in Blake Hance. I mean, so many guys have played left tackle for them at this point. And because of all the stuff that the Ravens do up front with the sim pressures, to have an offensive line that hasn't played together and is inexperienced creates great major problems, because what those do is not only play on the mind of the quarterback, they play on the minds that they're fooling offensive lines, essentially getting them to block ghosts and whatnot and create unblocked pressures. And I just think, oh my God, you don't want to have that sort of offensive line situation against this defense.
No, it's a recipe for disaster, just communication wise, as you said. Like, it's so important to get that stuff sorted out pre-snap. And it's just hard to be confident that they're going to be able to do that. Jacksonville's been probably the one team this year I just can't put my finger on it. Like, there's times where it looks so good and you feel like they should have taken another step, like adding Calvin Ridley, this Evan Engram's played awesome. Like, it feels like they should have taken another step this year. And they feel like
frustrating.
Almost exactly the same team. And like, it's a little bit frustrating because you wanted them to be a little bit something more. And maybe they hit their stride and maybe they figure some of that out here toward the end of the season. You are talking about a coach that's been down this road. He knows, and Doug Peterson, what this takes at this point in the season. So I have some faith that they maybe could do that and I could get into the playoffs and be a problem. Right now, it's hard for me to take them seriously as a contender given the way they play. I think they're going to win the division and they'll be in the mix, but I don't see them as a serious threat the way they've played this season so far.
Especially the defense, which started out so strong, especially against the run, and has completely collapsed over the last couple of weeks. What really concerns me against this Ravens team in particular is the play of the linebackers in Jacksonville. I mean, the last 2 weeks, offenses have just attacked the second level and just killed them with play action. And Ravens, play action, top five in just about every metric. You have a quarterback who is not very fun to play if you're a linebacker. And then a quarterback who's also like unsackable. So, even like your best player is Josh Allen, but if there is a quarterback who I think can, and playing by an offensive line is pretty good, can negate that to some degree. This defense needs to play better football than it has for a month now to keep this competitive. Because if they play anything like they have the last couple of weeks, I feel like they don't stand a chance.
Yeah, I mean, you can fill in a lot of, obviously, this is a Bulls coaching tree defense, and so you can kind of fill in a lot of the blanks with that, like just in terms of what I said about the Bucks. I feel like there's some similarities to that here. It's like they want to play a certain way, and they just don't want to change no matter what the other team does. And then if it when it works, like the games where the blitzes work and the pressures hit and all that stuff, and Josh Allen's free all game getting into the backfield, and like if it works, like it looks great, and everybody's like, man, they just terrorize that quarterback. But they're just it's so hit or miss depending on what the opposing offensive group does. And I just think Baltimore, the play action, being able to slow down the rush and what they do, like I think without mistakes, it's hard for me to see like a path, and or if Jacksonville just like does something totally new. It's hard for me to see a path. Like if they just come out and just like photocopy what they've been this season, I don't really know that I see a path offensively or defensively for them to have success in this game. Baltimore's just been, when they've been sharp, like it's just been like that part of it for them could continue just to roll right over Jacksonville, given what they've offered and put on the field.
Real quick, before we wrap on Ravens, Jags, sounds like we're both on the Ravens in this one.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this Ravens offense right now? Because Rams Ravens was really fun if you enjoy quarterback play, if you enjoy quarterbacks doing crazy things. But the offense, they're kind of inconsistent in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Mark Andrews, so I was kind of curious to see what that would look like. I mean, what was your takeaway? What's been your takeaway post Mark Andrews, watching this offense, watching the design of it? Do you feel like it's cohesive? Or do you feel like it's too reliant on Lamar doing crazy stuff? Like what do you generally feel watching them?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly feel like I'm still getting a feel for it a little bit, like what they wanted. Like there's so many times where it looks really good. They are just like a pretty good offense, I think. I don't think they're like touching the Dallas's or touching the San Francisco's this season necessarily right now. But their defense is awesome. And then their offense, you know, I feel like has like been perfectly good this season, and at times looked great this season too. I think the play action stuff to me is like is where they've kind of opened up things, I think, for Lamar a little bit. Like the fact that he's been able to operate as efficiently as he has in those situations this year, I think, has been a big plus. I like the direction they're moving in. I like a lot of things. I think some of it is young receivers, and they've still had, you know, their injuries and stuff. And I think figuring out some of that stuff is going to take time. But overall, I like the direction they're moving in. I don't have any like major issues with them at this point in time. I think if they can, they're another one that I think if they could find a way to hit some more of these deep balls and some more of these explosives, drops have been a big part of the issue at times, certain games this season too. Some of that, I just think, has to come together. They don't have like that proven star outside of Lamar on offense, like where there's this ace connection between him and somebody else. Andrews especially being hurt, as you said, and Andrews has had his drop issues this season when he was healthy too. So some of it, I think, is just new players learning to play together in a new system, and I think you're going to see some of that come out. Are they the favorite in the AFC though? That's the big question, because I think ordinarily you'd think of an offense better than this, but this year they might still be the favorite.
I mean, they have an elite defense, so that certainly helps. Yeah. I do think that that question, are they the favorite? Is this a Super Bowl team? Can the offense reach its potential? Might depend on whether or not his connection with Zay Flowers continues to develop and becomes sort of automatic. Because this was my takeaway kind of watching them. The offense goes through him now. Like, he is clearly the number one. And what's interesting is, like, when they drafted him, I love the player, Boston College. You know, he's so fun, so twitchy, creative, great route. He's like very precise with his routes. But I thought, you know, he's 5'9". He's going to be like a downfield guy and maybe like on like jet sweeps and stuff. Dude, he's their chains mover. Like, he is. And a lot of that is because defenses play him so soft. So it's just like, okay, like we'll convert on like 7-8 yard hitches over and over if that's what you give to us, which has not existed in this offense before as an option for Lamar. I actually looked this up for NFL Live the other day because I was curious. He, amongst receivers with like a decent target volume, he gets the biggest cushion of any player in the NFL right now. It's over 7 yards.
Wow.
And that's not from the slot. Like, again, that's another thing. They line him up. He's mostly out wide in this offense. So I think to kind of bring it back to sort of the ceiling here, he had a couple drops last. He also obviously had the touchdown catch, the 2-point play. you know, he is their guy. If he can also be, consistently be on the end of explosives for Lamar, especially off of play action, I think that's when I'll look at this offense and say, okay, you've got your number one wide receiver. You've obviously got a dynamic run game. This is like a Super Bowl caliber unit. And of course you have Lamar Jackson, who's amazing.
Yeah. And that's the thing Lamar has that, that like other quarterbacks don't have, like Lamar being this like middle of the field. He loves to play between the numbers, right? Like he's always been there, even in college, like that he loved to be play between the numbers as a passer. And what that does that while that can be, sometimes you have to teach quarterbacks to play there. And then, yeah. And he was almost backwards. Like he could play there from day one. He can anticipate zones and throw into zones and newer defenders remove and all that kind of stuff. He was good there. It's on the outsides where like sometimes it's falling apart for him, especially the deep ball. But like to offset that, like I think sometimes like they don't hit those explosives. He's been able to make them with their legs. So in some ways, like we talked about the situation with Goff, where it's like, I don't know if they can hit those explosives outside the numbers like consistently. Even if Lamar can't, you just have another added element. Even if that doesn't have become a consistent part of what they do offensively, you have a totally other added element to him with his legs and his escapability that I feel like we've almost become too accustomed to at this point that we don't celebrate enough. And it's just such an X factor.
Some of the plays he made with his legs against Los Angeles, both inside and out of the pocket, I was like, if this is, I know it's the meme is if Patrick Mahomes, but like, well, I guess the meme with Patrick Mahomes is like, if Patrick Mahomes did it, we were talking about it. I feel like that there should be like a meme where like Lamar Jackson's doing this and we're not talking about it enough. Like it's so,
yeah.
The way he moves so unbotheredly. That's not a word. I didn't use that correctly, but like he looks like so unafraid of being contacted when he moves. Oh, yeah. And it's totally because of his movement abilities, but also he has this like weird spidey sense with space and contact. I don't know. It's surreal watching it. Like it's next level. So yeah, obviously a lot more Ravens talk coming down the pipe, but Jacksonville, I don't want to sound hopeless because I do think I worry about the injuries. I just think the defense needs to play a lot better. Let's wrap with the Monday night game, Eagles Seahawks. Feels like the Seahawks need to win this. Although actually, if they lose, I think the last few games are winnable and Packers just lost. So I don't know, but whatever. The Eagles don't need to, but God, it feels like they have to because this is like the stem. This feels like the get right game. And I think it can be for the offense. Have talked a lot about the Eagles' offensive struggles, which have been kind of interesting. I think because it's still like an efficient offense is what makes it interesting. It's not just like an offense where you can point to and say like, oh, they don't run the ball anymore. Or they don't like they still do a lot of things at a fairly high level. It's just not it doesn't feel the same way it did last year. And I think it's been interesting to diagnose why. I don't know if any of that is even worth getting into against the Seahawks defense because I don't think it's going to get them a lot of problems, John. Like, I mean, what do you think? Like, I just feel like the Eagles have too many weapons and there are too many options for them against a Seahawks defense that's been absolutely atrocious over the last few weeks.
Yeah, and one of the things, you know, not to keep referencing, but Ollie brought this up, so I want to give him credit for it, but one of the things he keeps referencing is the fact that the Eagles aren't doing a lot of the things that they've done in the past, like that were staples of what they did last year that were really successful for them, that teams couldn't stop, and yet they're not doing them as much this year. So, like, why is that? Sometimes the route trees for everybody finally was, I think, alerted to it after A.J. Brown's looking at his route tree from the other night. It's like, why are they doing more with A.J. Brown? You know, where some of this guy should be an in-breaker king for you as a route runner, and they're just not using him that way consistently. Some of that stuff is odd. I feel like if the Eagles got out of their own way, they could find their way back into the mix a little bit, but they really haven't done that, and they're also just not quite the same rushing team, especially in first down that they've been at other points throughout the time that they've been really good last year, I guess. So all of those things are factors in this. Like, whereas I think the Eagles, if they play sequenced a little better, use their players a little better, Dallas Goedert coming back is huge for them. They don't have a third guy when he's out really at all, basically. And plus what he gives them, blocker formationally versatility, like he does a lot of things that don't show up in the box score for them. So him coming back I think will be really big for them. So this is an opportunity to move in a better direction for Philadelphia for sure. I think this could be, like I said, any game could kind of be a good get right game for them, because a lot of what they're doing is self-inflicted, in my opinion. And if they were kind of like give a good self-assessment review, they could be like, oh, we can go back to this or this. Like, we did these things in the past and, you know, these were really, really effective for us. I think if they can do that, they can hang with maybe anybody. We'll talk about the defense maybe, but I think they can get right back on track because they are still a really good group and they're good up front. And Hurts has actually played pretty good ball, despite the fact that I don't think the route concepts have been as friendly to him as it was last year. So I think the pieces are still there for Philly to be really good on offense. It just kind of comes from them self-assessing. I think if they can do that, yeah, I don't think Seattle's built to be able to stop them.
Well, the Hurts thing is interesting because you're right. He has played pretty good, but like he's throwing the ball well. I was thinking about that watching last week against Dallas. Like, you know, he still throws like a nice deep ball. I mean, I think. I think the problem is, to your point, there's, you know, his struggles as a runner this year is something I've talked about a lot, or the decline in performance there. And I think that really affects a lot of the other things they do. You know, when you talk about they're not doing some of the stuff they did last year, I assume that includes like the RPO menu to the same degree. Yep. And I do wonder how much of that is affected by his inefficacy. Yeah. As a runner, right? Because, yeah. You know, I mean, just every, we, oh God, going into the Super Bowl last year, we did so many segments on NFL Live trying to figure out how do you stop this RPO attack because of what the optionality at hand. And then, of course, when you do throw the RPO, you're throwing it to AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, who are just unbelievable. But when you take out Hurts out of the equation as a real threat to keep, and it becomes like for defenses, that's the outcome you want. You know, you're not at a numerical disadvantage the way you were before, to that same degree. I wonder how much harder it is for Philadelphia to sort of not like do the same stuff that they did last year, basically, with so much success.
Yeah, it is a good question. It's a valid question. We may not totally know, you know, from our perspective, you know, where we're at to our vantage point. But yeah, I mean, it is a good question. It is good. Thing to wonder about. I mean, because like you said, a lot of the things that when they do them, like Jalen Hurts, you said the deep ball, like he's hit, you know, 22, 23 of those things this year. Like they've still had that explosive element to their offense and the vertical passing game. You know, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks down the field in the NFL. He can throw intermediate and with great success as well. But yeah, the declining in the rushing. And then the other thing that's interesting to me when I look at his performance this season is the time to throw. What was the big question mark with him, right? We came out of that playoff loss to the Bucks in 2021, and there were legitimate questions. Is this the guy, like, long-term for this team? Like, can he be, and he was going to get another chance. The question was, can he speed everything up in the pocket? Like, can he play faster? He's always going to be, I mean, Lamar's over 3 seconds every year time to throw. Like, some guys can play that way, but for him, it felt like he needed to be more of an on-schedule passer. Last year, it all came together, right? He's 2.86 seconds to throw last year. For him, that was easily the best of his career. He was seeing the field well. The concepts were right there for him all the time. You mentioned the RPO game. This year, a lot of the stuff they're doing, he's backed at 3.18, same time to throw that he was in 2021. I don't think it's because Jalen Hurts can't see the field well. He is a very intelligent quarterback. It's probably the biggest mark in his favor, I would say. I think it's because the route concepts aren't as friendly to him as they've been in the past. I think they're not getting people open to the same degree they've gotten in the past. I think if they can fix that, if they can look at that part of it, he can go right back to being as effective as he is. Because big time throws, like he's at the highest rate of his career. Like he's throwing the ball great this year. It's just a matter of, can you give him something to throw to? Because he's not putting the ball in harm's way, but now he's holding the ball. He's under more pressure. He's taking more sacks. All those things are kind of adding up for him right now.
Yeah, we on Monday talked about this. I know Ben Solex talked about it as well, like the struggles on first down in particular.
Yeah.
You know, the numbers are way, I mean, they're one of the worst offenses in the NFL throwing the ball on first down, which is crazy. Like if you're an offense that's a threat to run and run the way they do, you should be a machine throwing the ball on first down. Like that should be a gimme because of the way defenses have to play you to account for the run, but they're 27th in EPA per play when they throw the ball on first down. And on live, we talked about that the average depth of target being so high on, again, first down and maybe being a bit too boom or bust. I would say another thing, and I think this cuts to the point you just made, is he seems, I don't know if it's like, I guess, a reluctance or design or both, but it's like Devontae and AJ are bust on first down. I mean, on first down, 60% of his targets are going to those two receivers, which is up from 47% last year. That might not sound like a difference, but that's a big difference. So going into this game against Seahawks defense, that's very weak up the spine, I would make a real concerted effort to get Dallas Goedert going and to potentially use those two receivers in different ways to get easier completions for them.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the quarterbacks and coaches, and rightfully so, but I also think like Devontae Smith can be better, I think, too, than he's been.
That's the thing. Like if 60% is AJ or Devontae and one of them has a bad game.
Yeah.
Devontae had a bad game against Dallas. He's a great player, but he had a bad game. Sorry.
Yeah. And his game's never going to be like mossing people, contested catches and everything, but he's 9-22 in contested catch situations. And a lot of tough catch opportunities for him have gone by the wayside this year, I think. He is not doing anything after the catch this year. He was at 5.1 yards after the catch last season. It's a good number for him. He's down to 3.3 this year. He's only forced 5 missed tackles. So he's not really making as many tough catches, and he's not really doing anything with the ball in his hands this year. He's still obviously a good player, and he is stretching the field for sure as well still this year. But there's some elements to the wide receiver game. Like, again, it's like you said, if these are your only two things, and now Goddard comes back and we'll see what that adds, these are only two guys, then you kind of need them to be more dynamic than they've been. And his numbers just kind of across the board are down compared to last year. So good football player. But if this is going to be all you get from him, then having another piece is really pretty important to being able to produce offensively.
Yeah, I think Seattle's best shot on that side of the ball is probably going to be either to tempt Jalen Hurts to push the ball downfield and take lower percentage shots, as we've been discussing, or, you know, get after him with the pass rush, which has been, it's not great. It's certainly not worth, you know, like, I mean, Leonard Williams has actually been like really good, but it doesn't really matter. But I think if, especially on that interior where they actually are pretty good with him and Jones, I think if they can force Jalen Hurts out of the pocket and, you know, potentially take away some of the easier options, get some 3-and-outs here and there. I'm not super optimistic on that side of the ball. However, I think Seattle's a chance because I do think this offense can move the ball on Philadelphia's defense if Geno Smith is playing quarterback, which I don't know what the latest is with him. I think I saw, I mean, there's a bunch of stories about like, oh, if it's Drew Locke, we could still win. I don't think that's true. I do think Geno Smith will play in this game. And if he doesn't, you can just ignore what I'm about to say here about the offense. But this is a defense that whose weaknesses have pretty well documented at this point. The personnel is just not great. And the pass rush is the strength of the team, but the pass rush is not elite. And then behind that pass rush, there are just a lot of areas that you can attack that I think Seattle is well positioned to attack. They're the worst defense in the NFL against tight ends. They're the second worst defense, I think, against number two wide receivers. Seattle has both of those things in spades. Yeah. So I really think that Seattle can move the ball on offense and get some explosives as well.
I very much agree. Seattle second best team in the NFL. I think EPA per play on first down. We talked about all the third best EPA per play on first down. They've been the first down kings, I feel like, or at least with Waldron. I feel like they've been good in that department. So they are doing excellent stuff on first down, kind of the anti-Philly in that way. Mm. And they can find explosives too. Like, that's the encouraging thing. Obviously, we're talking about all this if Geno Smith's out there and Drew Locke's not making 4 turnover-worthy plays each game. But I think if Geno Smith's out there, then I think they can do those kinds of things. Probably the least discussed thing nationally, at least from what I digest, is the fact that Philly's corners, who are so heralded last year and rightfully so, just haven't been those guys this year. Like, and that's a big factor in how they play defense. Those guys not being able to hold up. And Slay has kind of done this whole career. And there's stretches of his career where he's the best corner in the league. Like, he's just the best in the league. He's locked in. He's the best in the league. And then there's stretches where he's kind of like a cornerback's life in a microcosm. His whole career has been that way. Like, where he's been, oh, he's unbelievable. he's not very good. He's unbelievable. He's not very good. And it's kind of like that's his seesaw, basically, that he's been in. And Bradbury has really struggled. Seattle's got some matchups they can win in this game offensively. And that could turn this into anybody's game, even though it's one Philly feels like they need to have. Seattle's kind of desperate. They're well-coached. They can find explosives. If Geno's healthy, I kind of actually like the way this game might trend for them.
Yeah, that wide receiver two stat was a James Bradbury stat. And then the tight end stat is the linebackers and the safeties. Again, like, see, I mean, and you could argue JSN, who's their wide receiver three at times, is a two, basically. I think that both of these offenses are much more talented than both these defenses, frankly. Yeah. From Philly's perspective, the pass rushes would have to really come alive. And they have potential, no problem, no doubt. We've seen, you know, Hassan Reddick can be a little bit boom or bust, but the interior of that defensive line has, I think, the ability to really push the pocket on Seattle. Ooh, it's the Jalen Carter, Devin Witherspoon game. I didn't think about that. Defensive rookie of the year, you know, up for grabs. Mm-hmm. I think Devin Witherspoon is going to play. He got banged up. Very underrated loss. Well, not underrated in Seattle, but that was pretty big when he went out in the Niners game in particular. So, although, you know, it's interesting because Witherspoon's best in the slot with the Eagles, you really need elite outside corner play. So I'll be curious to see if they move Witherspoon outside, if he plays, even though he's better in the slot. Michael Jackson started for them last week. It'll be the Seahawks defense. It's interesting. Actually, I think both these defenses have like pretty similar problems, which is they don't have linebackers who can cover.
Yeah.
And then they have talented players, but like not enough of them, I think, to paper over their holes. So this could be a Monday night banger. Let's hope we get Geno Smith. I'll probably still pick Philadelphia, but you know, I'm just saying.
I'm picking Seattle. I'm just going to tell you. I'm picking Seattle. Yeah, I think Philly's defense is really struggling right now. And you know, who would have guessed this? And maybe I know pressure numbers are can be fickle, and you probably have better numbers than what I have Pro Football Reference's numbers to go off of. But Pro Football Reference has Seattle with a higher pressure rate this season, a higher quarterback knockdown rate this season, and they've got two more sacks than Philadelphia. And it's not to say Philadelphia's been bad rushing the quarterback. Who would have thought it? Seattle, like with all the like, that's where's crazy. Their pass rushers? It's they are
the
getting
pass rush
there
is not the worst part of the Seahawks defense by any means. It's not great, especially since losing to Osu, but I don't think that's a problem. And again, like Leonard Williams is good. Was it a good trade? No, because look at this team. But he's a good football player, man. Like he is disruptive out there.
Yeah.
So it should be a good matchup. Yeah. All right.
It's gonna be a fun game, I think. Yeah.
Can you mind help me rip through some picks as I wrap this up?
Just let's do it.
Very quick. Okay. Oh my God. Thursday night is Chargers at Vegas. Vegas with Aiden O'Connell facing off with Easton Stick is favored by 3. I'll take Vegas. I don't know.
I'll take Vegas as well. I just don't believe in anything the Chargers are doing right now. I think they're done.
This one's actually really hard to pick, I think. The Bengals are favored by 3 at home versus Minnesota. Again, Jake Browning versus Nick Mullen. So I think Browning is playing very good football. And I would pick Cincinnati, but I am scared to pick against Brian Flores' defense right now. Is that crazy?
Like, what's you?
They're good.
Yeah. I don't know how. It's truly remarkable. The guy has done
it.
I mean, he has done innovative things on defense that several times now that we've never seen other guys do. So I still am going to go Cincinnati. I think they figured something out. And they could rattle the heck out of Browning, but I think I'm still going to go Cincinnati.
Okay. Steelers. God, is it Trubisky again? God, this slate.
Yeah, until he gets pulled for Mason Rudolph. Yeah.
Okay. At the Colts. Colts are favored by 1.5. Gardner Minshew. You pick
I'm going Steelers. This is what they do. They lose disappointing games and then they win one just when you're about to be out on them. This is what they do. I just feel like they're going to win. It does not going to make any sense, but they're going to win.
Yeah. God, you ready for a Steelers playoff game?
No, please don't. I don't want it to happen. I don't want it
okay,
to happen.
Okay. So we both went Lions. I think we both went Packers. Wow. Atlanta's only favored by 3 against Carolina. That is disrespectful.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm taking Atlanta, but geez.
Definitely taking Atlanta. That is absurd. Carolina's extremely bad.
They're so bad. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Again, staying in the NFC South, the Giants are, or the Saints are favored by 6 at home against the Giants. I'll tell you the Saints here. Tommy DeVito against the Saints defense, I feel like, is when the chicken cutlets fall off the plate.
I'm going Giants. I just think the Saints aren't very good. Like, I don't trust them at all, and the Giants have figured a couple things out. Yeah.
I talked about this on Monday. I do think the Giants defense is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. CJ Stroud, I think, is playing, right? He was concussed. Well, I don't know, actually. But
I don't think we know yet.
Yeah, so the Texans are at the Titans. The Titans are favored by 2.5, which I think assumes that CJ Stroud doesn't play. I'm going to be a total I'll take the Texans if CJ Stroud plays. So watch that one. And, you know, I'll take the Titans 100%. If he doesn't. Yeah, okay, the Browns. Justin Fields traveling to Cleveland. Cleveland is favored by 3, led by Joe Flacco. Cleveland got some tough news today. They lost Grant Delpit and Obo Okoronkwo to injury. That sucks. I had just made this
reason why. Yeah.
Oh, I had just made this whole case about, like, oh, Cleveland, no one wants to play them. Joe Flacco, high variance quarterback, defense is back on track. And now this. And the Bears defense is playing good football and they're really good against the run. I might take Chicago.
I also think Chicago. I think they've figured some things out, and the Browns are hurting both sides of the ball. Tackles are a mess right now.
Oh my God. Yes. They hid that a lot with the play action against Jacksonville, as I alluded to.
And quietly, the Bears are actually rushing the quarterback. I know they lost Ngakoue this week, but they are quietly rushing the quarterback.
They are. Yes. Okay, the Zach Wilson AFC Player of the Week helmed New York Jets traveled to Miami. Miami's favored by 8.5. The bang Miami on this one, but I was gonna say, I feel like Miami. This is like a we just got embarrassed. Let's and it's at home, and the Bailey Zappi, I believe, led Patriots go to Kansas City. This is in New England. Bill Belichick's last stand. Obviously take the Chiefs. They're favored by 8.5. I might take New England to cover. Rams, Washington goes to the Rams. I like the Rams, man. That's a good team. Good 100%. Offense.
Yep.
6.5 they're favored by.
Good team. I know they don't have the record for it, but Sean McVay should be in the coach of the year conversations. Ooh. That roster at the beginning of the season, we all laughed, and he's about to make the playoffs with it.
Many, many comments about people think I had Sean McVay on my podcast when you were on, by the way.
Interesting.
That guy looks exactly like Sean McVay. So.
That's very funny. I'll take that as a
compliment. You could be his new get back guy. The Rams always have like 20 coaches who look exactly like Sean McVay.
They do. That's very true. That's very funny.
Like variants. Okay. The Niners go to Arizona. 12.5. Yeah, that's easy.
Arizona's scrappy, but easy.
Did we both take Dallas or did you take the Bills? I'm taking Dallas.
I took Dallas as well. Yeah, I'd love to be able to take the Bills. I just feel really good about what Dallas is doing right now.
Ravens only favored by 3 at Jacksonville. I get that. I'm taking the Ravens, but I understand it, you know. And then
I want Jacksonville to prove to me that they're capable of more.
Yeah.
So I'm holding them to a high standard.
They might be the most inscrutable team in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the Eagles. You're taking Seattle. Love that. I'll take the Eagles as an emotional hedge. And that's it. John, tell the people where they can find your work.
Oh, man. So I do a lot of this stuff on the side now. So if you're looking for me to talk about the NFL, the Audibles and Analytics podcast, Ollie Connolly and I, who does the Read Optional Substack, we do a crossover podcast once a week, maybe twice a week if we're feeling frisky, and we'll do what we call the Home and Home podcast. We just talk ball for like an hour and a half. We recorded an episode today. It just dropped. So if you're into subscribing for a couple bucks a month, that's the Audibles and Analytics podcast. You can listen to that. We get in the weeds, but it's fun. If people like this show, they'll love it because it's exactly that kind of stuff. You know, you the football nerd stuff comes out for sure. I also do a Bucks podcast on Audible's analytics because I covered the team for a couple of years. That drops once a week as well. And then the Steelers podcast with myself and Brad Spielberger, I do that three times a week as well, over at Yin's No Ball podcast. You can search that and find it. So I'm doing all kinds of stuff, Mina.
Yeah, just... you do that. You're like, I do this on the side. Here are my 20 jobs. Oh, and by the way, the Steelers and the Bucks. God bless you.
Oh, yes, I know. It's been a tough year, but we are persevering.
Both teams still in the hunt?
Still
in the hunt.
I just want to cover the gap, Mina.
Oh, my God. We'll get there. John Ledyard NFL, I believe, is your Twitter account.
Ledyard at NFL Draft, yeah.
At NFL. Okay, well, I'll tweet this out and they'll see your handle. Thank you, as always. Thank you to the kind folks at Omaha, Kirsten Sebecki, Owen Saylor, Anthony Jimenez for helping me. And we will be back next week with Dominique to recap what should be an exciting week 15.
Thanks, Mina. Always a blast.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.